The Trudeau Liberals are in free fall, with both Sean Fraser and Chrystia Freeland announcing their exit from cabinet this week. Predictably, Justin Trudeau is scrambling to hold onto power as the calls for him to resign mount from both former and current Liberal MPs. The question that really matters is, will this result in an election for Canadians? Joining me today to discuss is Anthony Kosh, a former spokesperson for Pierre Poilievre. I'm Rachel Parker, and you're watching The Rachel Parker Show. Hey guys, welcome back to The Rachel Parker Show. I'm your host, Rachel Parker. We have lots to dive into today. First and foremost, I want to acknowledge that I know you as the audience are going to be very excited over Chrystia Freeland's exit from cabinet. I know that I used to have to do trigger warnings when we would have Freeland clips because some of you are just so tired of listening to her talk down to you. Looks like we are going to have a break from Chrystia Freeland clips, maybe for forever. All right, I want to welcome our guest, Anthony Kosh, a former spokesperson for Pierre Poilievre and an Ottawa insider. He is going to break down what everything means. Anthony, thank you so much for being here today. I want to start by taking a look at Chrystia Freeland's resignation letter. So she posted this resignation letter yesterday morning, and it blew up because she absolutely knifed Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in the back. She said that they have not been seeing eye to eye for a few weeks now, and that he had asked her to step down, but she acknowledged that that means she had lost the confidence of the prime minister. She wouldn't be able to speak for him. And as such, she thought it would be best for her to leave the cabinet entirely. She also accused him of costly political gimmicks. And I want to ask you, have we seen something like this before? Obviously, there's been a lot of turnover with Trudeau's cabinet. Have we seen someone so aptly knife him in the back on their way out the door?
Obviously, you have cabinet ministers who get frustrated with the incumbent prime minister and resign and make declarations to the effect that they no longer have confidence. But it's the way that she did this that was so shocking. Right? An hour before the fall economic statement is set to go live to journalists, she drops this letter on Twitter and blasts it to every journalistic outfit in the country. Basically says, Prime Minister wanted to fire me on Friday. And by all accounts, the Prime Minister's office was not aware that she was going to do this. And then she drops this bomb and accuses him of political gimmicks. And says, you know, basically figure it out, guys. I'm not giving the statement. So find somebody who is.
So with the fall economic statement, what was the fallout of that? How did the Liberal government proceed with delivering that statement to Canadians?
Well, it was funny because at one point, like, it was the constant delay. So everybody was in the media lockup and there's a bunch of junior staffers effectively telling the journalists that they didn't know what the heck was going on either. But every half an hour, there was an update that it's coming soon. It's coming soon. It's coming soon. It's coming soon. Subsequent to that, Karina Gold, another Trudeau minister, was supposed to give and deliver the statement, after which she said, actually, no, I'm not going to be delivering the statement. We're not releasing it today. We're going to delay it. And then, again, sort of ad hoc, the Liberals actually did end up releasing the contents of the statement to the country. So that's how we're now able to find out we got a $62 billion whopping deficit. But the actual more formal presentation portion didn't really happen the way that it was supposed to. So an absolute, like, you know, I think it was, I'm not sure if it was Chris Selly, somebody at the National Post, might have been John Iveson, described it as government by improv. You know, they're running by the skin of their teeth their entire day, all the way from having to grab Dominic LeBlanc in to swear him in as finance minister within a few hours' notice to getting this document out there. It was disaster from beginning, middle to end. And again, historically unprecedented. Your deputy prime minister taking a shot at you like this. And there's the most important part of the letter, I think. Beyond the slights and the shots that she took at the prime minister directly, which are noteworthy on their own, she made it very clear that she's staying in the Liberal caucus and that she has every intention of reoffering as a Liberal candidate in the next election. So translation, declaration of war. That's what that is. It's all right, buddy. If I'm kicked out or if I leave at any point in the next few weeks, everybody's going to know it's because you sent me packing and I'm not leaving of my own volition. So I think we can also say this is the de facto start of the Liberal leadership to see who's going to follow up Justin Trudeau as leader of the Liberal Party of Canada.
One of the things that everyone has been talking about, yes, is of course, you know, Justin Trudeau should step down as a Liberal leader. You're saying that it looks like Chrystia Freeland is already announcing her intentions to run for that position.
Absolutely. I don't think it's a surprise to too many people But I think a lot of plans got jigged yesterday. So it was clear, a lot of the back rooms were wise with this, and this was publicly speculated, is that liberals have been trying to recruit Mark Carney, former governor of the Bank of Canada and subsequently governor of the Bank of England, to come be his finance minister. Now, obviously, in order to have him be finance minister, it means you need to get rid of the person who was currently in that position in Chrystia Freeland. So I think that's what they were planning to do. I'm actually shocked. Here's a lady, whatever. Love Miss Freeland, dislike Miss Freeland like I, and I'm sure your listeners do. Fact of the matter is she was very loyal to the prime minister for the entire decade that they've been in office and has taken many bullets on his behalf and very uncomfortable situations over the course of those years. And for the prime minister to basically sit down with her by Zoom, not even in person, and basically say, hey, yeah, thanks for everything. We want you to deliver this fall economic statement with a $62 billion deficit. Then once you're done, we're going to swap somebody in for you, and we're going to move you to some vague Canada-US relations position that doesn't have any staff or an actual ministry behind it. Thanks, Chrystia. Hope you enjoy that one. Obviously, she didn't, and now this is where we ended up. But it's just, again, Katie Telford, a senior Liberal staffers, were partying up in New York this weekend after that conversation was had. So just shocking on any number of fronts. But I think there was a lot of plans and calculations and strategies in Liberal world that went up in smoke yesterday. And Justin Trudeau's prime ministership may be one of them.
Okay, let's talk about Justin Trudeau a little bit. So we have now Chrystia Freeland looks like she's vying for that Liberal leadership. As I mentioned, the calls for Trudeau to step down are mounting from former Liberal MPs, but also from within his caucus. What would it take for his caucus, which has been pretty teethless up until this point, to actually give Trudeau the boot?
So here's the thing. There's this thing called the Reform Act. So basically, at the beginning of every parliamentary session, each caucus votes on three things. So that's why the mechanism that was used to remove Erin O'Toole as leader of the Conservative Party back in 2021, that's part of the Reform Act. The thing is, the Liberals refused to adopt the measures that would allow them by simple majority vote to remove Justin Trudeau as leader. So technically speaking, by the letter of the rules, they actually don't have any mechanism at all to remove Justin Trudeau as leader of the Liberal Party. But there's, you know, the book and the letter, and then there's the actual reality of the situation. So if a majority or even a sizable minority of Liberal MPs were to basically go out and say, hey, buddy, if you stick around, I'm going to sit as an independent, or we're going to actively campaign against your leadership, we're going to keep taking pot shots at you, and basically made it such that it would be functionally impossible for Mr. Trudeau to continue as leader of the Liberal Party and by extension as prime minister, he could be removed. So it's an informal sort of mechanism. Again, it would be much more similar to the processes that undertook to remove Andrew Scheer as leader of the Conservative Party. You know, it's sort of more informal. There's a campaign that transferred, and then just the pressure became so monumentous that he decided to bow out, among other reasons. But in this particular circumstance, the sort of Erin O'Toole-esque removal is not possible because they didn't adopt it. But beyond that, now it looks like it's the other parties are doing more than enough to pressure. Now you have both the Bloc Québécois and the NDP, finally. Peter Julian made a comment yesterday, if I'm correct, basically saying that if Justin Trudeau is still prime minister come end of January when the House comes back, that they would, in all likelihood, support a non-confidence motion in the government and trigger elections.
Yeah, so I think that's even the more interesting question here, and it's certainly a question that I've been fielding since all this news broke yesterday from friends and family and interested Canadians. Does this mean that we are going to have an early election? And you're now saying that the NDP is signaling that they are looking to that vote of non-confidence in January if Trudeau is still prime minister. The NDP says a lot of stuff. Jagmeet Singh has been very critical of Trudeau while propping up his government. Do you believe them?
I don't. And it was hilarious. I think the biggest loser yesterday wasn't the prime minister. It was actually probably Jagmeet Singh. I mean, he came out and did his song and dance about how he was calling on the prime minister to resign. But then when the follow-up question inevitably came about, well, Mr. Singh, does that mean that you would, you know, at least support or yourself propose a motion of non-confidence in the government? And he said, well, all options are always on the table. Very non-committal, classic. So I have distrust there, but I do happen to believe, I think that if Justin Trudeau is still prime minister, that there is a very good chance that we will be in an early election at some point late January, early February. But what I suspect, and this is where I could see it going in an alternative direction, somewhere around January 15th, Justin Trudeau realizes that there's no path forward for him. The advisors and the backroom boys all come and sit down with him and say, hey, listen, buddy, you know, lights out. Same thing that happened to his father, right? There's that famous euphemism in Canadian politics. Pierre-Elliott Trudeau when he resigned from the prime minister's office in the mid 80s before Brian Mulroney's election when he became prime minister, said that he went for a walk in the snow and came to the realization that he was going to end his political career. So people are asking, is Mr. Trudeau going to take his walk in the snow? Now, I suspect he probably will once the full picture sort of comes out. And now more Liberal MPs are feeling emboldened than they ever have before. So I think what we'll probably end up seeing is a Trudeau resignation before the return of the next parliamentary session. So, maybe a prorogement of parliament, but a Liberal leadership race, very expedited. And I think that will give the necessary ideological or situational context for the NDP to not support a motion of confidence. And so, well, Mr. Trudeau is now gone. We have to let the Liberals go through their process or whatever. Again, many scenarios are on the table and weirder things have happened. But if I'm a betting man, I don't think we're going into an election in January based on the actions of the New Democratic Party or Jagmeet Singh.
If Trudeau does make that decision and we see a Liberal leadership race, who do you see as some contenders in that possible race?
Anita Anand, Melanie Joly, François-Philippe Champagne, Chrystia Freeland, maybe Mark Carney, maybe a Dominic LeBlanc. There's a number of people. The problem is how wonderful, like again, in theory, if this actually does come to pass, the big gold medal that's on offer for people, the carrot, if you will, is that they become prime minister for all of 6 minutes. So it's great. You get to be prime minister in theory. But again, do you want to be the next Kim Campbell? Is it fun to be the next Kim Campbell? Because I don't think we're so... Wayne Long, an incumbent Liberal MP from, I believe, New Brunswick yesterday, gave an interview on CBC where he basically said, we're so far underwater at this point that we're even beyond just saving the furniture. They're toast. And if they think they're going to be able to pull a last second bait and switch and throw in somebody new and shiny and that Canadians are going to be, oh, well, you know, the Liberals were polling at 17% before Trudeau left, but now that they've got somebody new, maybe we'll... That's not going to happen. So anybody who runs for that job at this point would be doing so with the full knowledge that their time as prime minister was going to be extraordinarily short-lived. So it's also possible that a lot of people keep their powder dry, wait for that absolutely catastrophic election result with a massive conservative majority, and then decide to throw their name into the race to be a part of the rebuilding of the party, if you will, following a massive majority.
So yesterday, Trudeau said, you know, he told supporters at a fundraiser he's going to stay on, but he's going to reflect about whether he should stay on long-term as leader. I want to ask you a little bit about the Donald Trump effect here. A lot of people sort of hailing Donald Trump, they're saying this is all happening because of Trump's threat of 25% tariffs on all Canadian goods entering the U.S. And obviously Justin Trudeau and Chrystia Freeland sparring on how to best deal with that, eventually leading to Chrystia Freeland's exit. Do you attribute any of what's gone on in the last 24 hours to the president-elect?
I think he deserves... This is almost entirely Trump's doing to some extent. I mean, obviously, Trudeau has been mistreating his cabinet ministers and caucus members for a very long time. So he set the groundwork for this. But even if you read the content of Ms. Freeland's letter, it's very clear that this was, in her mind, a very credible and serious threat that needed to be taken with the utmost sincerity by the Canadian government. And that's why she makes that reference to political gimmicks. You know, she's saying, if we're going to end up in a trade war with the Americans, we're going to have some fiscal firepower, either to put in place our own retaliatory tariffs, or if we need to provide subsidies for Canadian businesses to remain in Canada, any of those fiscal levers need to be in order. And if you're doing these random $250 check things, that are basically designed to make the government, you know, bribe people with their own money effectively, but significantly hamstring the government's ability to spend money in more effective ways in this sort of trade war, it's done. So that's sort of, again, Mr. Trudeau probably was going to try to get rid of Ms. Freeland anyway, but I think this provided an ideological aggravation for a number of people in the Liberal Party to say, okay, man, this guy's just not serious. He wasn't serious in 2015. He wasn't serious in 2019. But let's be frank, the risks to Canada, especially vis-a-vis the United States, were not as serious as they are now. Now they are serious. And even Liberals are saying we need somebody serious at the helm that actually recognizes the severity of the situation that we face. And they don't think that it's him anymore.
Just super quickly, I want to touch on the by-election in BC. The Conservatives flipped the Coverdale-Langley City by-election yesterday. It was a seat held by the Liberals. The Conservatives won it. The unofficial results I'm looking at here show they won it with about 66% of the vote. How does a government, how does Trudeau hang on with so much bad news?
So this is the thing. He has survived so many things that nobody else would have survived, but I don't think he's going to be able to survive this one because there's just too much between the now massive string of by-election losses, including in downtown Toronto, your own caucus is turning on you, your deputy prime minister and most visible cabinet minister that you've been parading around up until 5 days ago as this great champion, an example of a brilliant person on the world stage, now publicly stabs you in the back. You've got Minister Fraser leaving as well, who was supposed to be the wonder kid, high performer on housing. People are jumping ship. They're abandoning ship left, right, and center. So there's just too many problems. If it was one of these, if it was just Chrystia Freeland resigning, if it was just, you know, a couple of people grumbling in caucus, if it was just one or two by-election losses, maybe he could weather the storm. But now you've also got the Bloc Québécois and the NDP flexing their muscles. Pierre Poilievre had, in my opinion, his best day ever in the House of Commons yesterday, pounding the drum, getting ready, laying the groundwork for a future election campaign. It's just too much. You got to ask the question, like, why stick around? It's not getting better. It's been bad for 2 years. And that's been the joke, right? It's like, okay, the Liberals are at 25%, 23%, 21%, 19%. The question, how far are they going to drop and can they continue to go worse? And the answer so far has been yes. They haven't even bottomed out yet. So I don't really see how you survive in this particular circumstance.
Anthony, thanks so much for your time today.
No worries. Thanks.
That was Anthony Kosh, the managing principal at AK Strategies, as well the former national campaign spokesperson for Pierre Poilievre. Everyone, I just want to take a few minutes and discuss an op-ed that I wrote back in 2022 for the Western Standard, the paper that I was working at for the time. And the reason I want to discuss this, and I think some of you have probably seen this circulating online in the last few days, or maybe you're like an OG Rachel fan. I was Rachel Emanuel just a few years ago, now Rachel Parker, obviously. And you remember when this all went down, as some of you have been commenting underneath this op-ed that I reshared saying that you remember when this first happened. But I actually have a sort of a colorful history with Chrystia Freeland, if you will, and the fact that her office was actually the catalyst that led me to exiting the mainstream media back in 2022. We're well into the COVID-19 pandemic. I had been working for the mainstream media, iPolitics, which was a subsidiary of the Toronto Star, having a very difficult time there, writing articles that I thought were important and relevant to Canadians and that spoke up for the issues that mattered at the time, which was and still remains to be to an extent civil liberties. And I had, you know, been frequently, I would argue with my editors late into the night discussing the specific of wording, discussing whether certain stories were even valid to be written about. And the relationship had grown very difficult. But I had always been so determined to work in the mainstream press because I felt like my voice and the voice of conservatives wasn't really reflected in the press. I think when you look at the mainstream media, if you follow a certain reporter, you can typically say, you know, they seem to lean a little bit to the left, they seem to lean a little bit to the right. And, you know, up and coming and paying attention to journalists, I just felt like you really didn't see many voices that seemed to lean to the right. And so I thought, you know, I want to work in the mainstream press and I want to be that voice that, you know, does represent people on the right. And I quickly realized, you know, why those voices are not in the mainstream press in Canada. It's because of the institution as a whole just doesn't allow them to exist. You will have roadblocks at every opportunity when you try to present the voice of Canadian conservatives who are not heard. And so that sort of led to me exiting the mainstream press in Canada because I realized that I just was not able to follow my conscience in doing that job, and the relationship came too difficult. But the sort of the nail in the coffin was I had written an article about Chrystia Freeland, and her office had called up my editor and pressured my editor to change the story. And my editor obliged. They gave me a call. They gave me a hard time about my story, which I had done lots of due diligence on. It had gone through the typical editing process at my company. And it wasn't until Krista Freeland's office called my editor that my editor actually went in and changed the story without running any of the changes by me, changed the story. And I went back online and the article had been changed. And it's totally inappropriate for an editor to publish words under your name that you did not write. A proper media outlet would never allow such a thing. For example, when I worked at the Globe and Mail, every single change that was made to your article, you had to approve so that editors were not accidentally editing mistakes into it. And so that certainly you as a reporter knew what was being published under your name. So that was sort of the catalyst that led to me leaving the mainstream media. And it was a really difficult thing for me to do at the time. And I remember having a lot of anxiety about it, especially when my op-ed was published. But you know, obviously things have worked out for me. Someone commented when I shared this yesterday, they said, oh, now iPolitics is waiting for the Pierre Poilievre government to strip away their subsidies and you are interviewing the premier, which is true. So I'm just going to read a little bit from this column now. You guys can find the full version online. I've yet to speak publicly about the events that led to my sudden departure from iPolitics after an editor altered my article following pressure from Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland's office. For the record, Freeland was photographed holding a banner that had links to Stefan Bandera, the leader of the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, whose followers acted as local militia members for the SS and the regular German army. And his branding has since been repurposed by neo-Nazis. But after reading the article in its current form, post-Freeland pressure, you'd think the Deputy Prime Minister was pictured near a scarf that coincidentally shared the red and black colors that have, at times, been associated with Bandera. Never mind the photo evidence of her holding the banner, which is emblazoned with Bandera's colors and slogan. And maybe Freeland didn't see what she was holding, or she didn't know its muddled history. But the hypocrisy of a federal politician refusing to own her mistake, just weeks after condemning conservatives for attending the trucker's convoy where an unidentified man carried a Nazi flag, seemed at least noteworthy. This wasn't the first time I'd received pushback for my work from within my editorial team, or the first time changes were made to words published under my name that I did not agree with or even have prior knowledge of. It also wasn't the reason I left the mainstream media. Rather, the uncomfortable Freeland incident only solidified my decision to find employment somewhere I could follow my conscience. As a legacy mainstream media reporter, I thought I could give a voice to those not currently represented, but it quickly became clear that structures exist to keep those voices, shall we call them unacceptable, out of sight, or at least portrayed in a manner that left me deeply uncomfortable. And it goes on, and you can hear a little bit about why I decided to leave the legacy media to work for independent media. And, you know, as I said, at the time, that decision, I had a great deal of anxiety about it. I also had a great deal of anxiety publishing this column because I tend to be a more private person, and this felt like something very personal. And I think that it's all worked out in the end. So if you're going through hardships yourself at home right now, know that God has a plan for you and that, you know, sometimes going through difficult things can really be the best for us because it molds us and shapes us as people. I want to respond to some of your comments now in the weekly comment roundup. And I also wanted to flag for you guys, just in case some of you missed it, that I did interview Alberta Premier Danielle Smith over the weekend. I promised you all when I passed off the Alberta Roundup to Isaac that I would continue doing a lot of Alberta coverage. I think that I've held up to my end of the bargain. You can go get my full exclusive interview with Alberta Premier Danielle Smith on True North on our website and our YouTube page. So you'll definitely want to watch that. I think it was a really great conversation, a lot of positive feedback. Actually, just going to play this clip for you guys here. I asked the Premier what she thinks about the government using the propaganda of saying that we're going to steal Canadians' hunting tools and firearms to send them to Ukraine to help in the fight against Putin. Here's what the Premier had to say about it.
When I saw those tweets, I thought this must be fake news. Somebody must be making up some ridiculous tweet to put that out there. And then sure enough, it turned out to be true. I think that probably some of the commentary where they said, well, if it does happen and Ukrainians open up the crates, all they're going to see is a bunch of hunting rifles. Like that is not, they're trying to mischaracterize what these firearms are. And that's the thing I find frustrating. I also find it frustrating that they keep doing these things at a time that we are trying to have a new relationship with the American administration, which is Republican, which is far more supportive of the rights of law-abiding firearms owners. So it's almost like the federal government is trying to antagonize on this issue, and I don't understand it. But my position is the same today as it was when the first gun grab was announced, that they, I believe, have now spent $70 million, and they haven't confiscated a single gun. And I hope that continues. I hope they do not confiscate a single gun, because we believe that the real issue that we have is the cross-border illegal trade and guns ending up in the hands of gangs and organized crime. That's what we should be going after. And that's what we announced in our border announcement. We're going to go after the criminal use of firearms. We're not going to go after law-abiding gun owners.
Okay, so you'll definitely want to go and check out that full episode. It's not too long, about 15 minutes. It was actually funny when I showed up to the McDougall Center in Calgary on Thursday. Like, everyone in the Alberta Press Gallery was there. I guess the Premier was doing her year-end interviews. So everyone had sort of like back-to-back slots with her. I think she was doing about 10 interviews that day. Western Standard was there. Rebel News was there. CBC was there. So hopefully I had some interesting questions that you guys won't hear elsewhere on the other outlets. I feel actually quite confident that I did. Just a few comments here. This one's from user at Tanya said, I have so much respect for Danielle. Glad she is our premier. The Seventh Pilot said, True North is really getting to have a great voice, and hats off to you. User Skill Gap Trainer said, thanks for doing bold things. That was in reference to something the premier says in the interview. User Mike McCluskey said, I loved this interview. It gave me goosebumps. I pray Danielle and Pierre take the lead in Canada and teach other premiers how to govern. All right, so some really great feedback from the episode. You guys know I always love to hear your thoughts on my content. So definitely go give that a check and let me know what you think of the interview and the questions. Sometimes you guys give suggested questions for future interviews. I always appreciate those and take them into consideration as well. And then for today, please post in the comments below what you think about Anthony's prediction. Do you think that Trudeau will step down and that we will see a Liberal leadership race in late January, early February? Or do you think that he is going to hold onto power to the bitter end? All right, everyone, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I will see you guys tomorrow with more content on the Rachel and the Republic. And we'll be back next week with another episode of the Rachel Parker Show. I hope that you guys have a great week. God bless.